Welcome to episode 5 of Intentional Living with Kathy and Michael. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Kathy.
Today we're going to talk about when things don't work.
Yay.
Always something to look forward to. We aspire to live intentional lives. We work hard at it. But sometimes it feels like it doesn't work.
Yeah, because sometimes it doesn't work.
Right. So
but you're absolutely right. And sometimes it really feels or it looks like it doesn't work, but maybe it is working.
Somebody said to me one time when I was regretting a decision I had made, I said something like, I've ruined my life. And this person said to me, that's impossible. You can't ruin your life. Wherever you are at that moment, that's where you meant to be. And I found it very empowering. So one of the things we'll talk about today are sort of symptoms of when things are not working and how to reframe that situation. And you might find that something you think isn't working is actually working in a way you didn't expect.
Mm-hmm.
So, Michael, you've given some thought to some of these side channels. And what are some of the things to look for that might clue you into when things are not working?
So what we're going to talk today about when things don't work, I'll just give a rundown, and then we'll go into specifics as we get there. So we're going to talk about rackets and what rackets are, you know, a way of behaving, right, that takes responsibility off of yourself. Complaints, how we're constantly complaining, again, disempowering ourselves, putting responsibility outside of ourselves. We'll talk about being authentic and how being authentic can empower the situation, empower you in the situation. We'll talk about self-discipline, self-love. A couple of distinctions that I got from Landmark. Be willing to want to and in the face of no agreement. We'll also say, let's just look at the plan, right? So we've talked about creating plans, right? We talk about big picture plans, small short-term plans, right? Task-oriented plans. So one of the things to do is when things don't seem to be working is to look at your plan, right? And we'll go into specifics around that. And then we'll also talk a little bit about integrity and a great book, The Four Agreements.
Yes. Well, Michael, this word you used, distinctions, when we first started talking and you used that word,
mm-hmm.
I didn't really get it right away. Can you say a little bit more about what you mean when you say a distinction?
That's really interesting. So a distinction. So basically the way I look at it as a distinction is a definition in a sense, but I'm actually going to look it up. Distinction. So when I use the term distinction, I'm really using it because I got the term from Landmark, where we're talking about different phenomenons or
mm-hmm.
different quote-unquote laws of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the distinction helps you to see that law.
Right.
And then if you can see that law, then you can use that law. But at the same time, I'll break it down even more simply, right? So we all know what chairs are.
Mm-hmm.
And the chair is actually a distinction, right? A chair itself is just pieces of wood or pieces of metal, right, that are put together. And then we use the distinction or the definition of, we're saying that's a chair within the definition says we use that to sit on,
mm-hmm.
right? But you could use a chair to play baseball. You're not going to be very good by doing it that way, right? But
mm-hmm.
you could literally pick up a chair and use it as a bat.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it probably won't work all that well. So how we define things or how we distinguish things gives us that opportunity to use them in a certain way to fulfill a certain desire.
Mm-hmm. As I've gotten more used to using that term, it sometimes seems to me as though the distinction is offered to elevate thinking. Okay, you have been thinking about things this way, but let me offer you a different way of thinking about that. So is that fair game to think of it as an elevation or a distinction in the sense of you have been thinking about it this way, let me divide the subject matter, invite you to think about it in this way.
I think that's awesome.
Okay.
Yeah. And also, in doing it like that, it's also being responsible, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you're giving whoever it is that you're speaking to the opportunity to use it as a tool,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's like an addition,
mm-hmm.
right? As opposed to, say, a stop and a division.
Mm-hmm.
You did it wrong. You should do it like this.
Mm-hmm.
This is the way it is, right?
Mm-hmm. So should we start with rackets?
We certainly can, yes. Rackets. So rackets is something that comes from Landmark, the distinction. And the racket is, quote-unquote, a fixed way of being and a persistent complaint. Rackets are used in the case of loss of power, freedom, self-expression, or peace of mind. There is always a payoff with a racket. So we use a racket to get a payoff. So right or wrong, dominant, avoid domination, self-justification, invalidating others, win, lose, on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
So I when I look at what a racket is, it's a little narrative, a little story I tell myself, to explain what I think is going on,
mm-hmm.
to actually put responsibility outside of myself.
Uh-huh.
All right. So I had this huge racket that my father was never a good father.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see that, so that's a little story. My father was never a good father. And the payoff is, like, without saying it, the payoff was, since he was not a good father, I'm allowed to have a mediocre life, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not being pushed to be the best self that I could be. Because I just check it off.
Mm-hmm.
I have this little payoff saying, well, it's the responsibility is not here with me.
Mm-hmm.
The responsibility is my father, who's just never a good father. So it's no wonder that I didn't win class president. It's no wonder that I wasn't the most popular one in my class,
mm-hmm.
you know, so forth and so on, because I'm damaged.
Mm-hmm.
I'm missing something that I should have. And that's another distinction, too, that the word should is a four-letter word, meaning that when you start saying that things should be a certain way, you are also disempowering yourself around that as well. You're setting a whole bunch of expectations on what outside of you needs to be without realizing that if things are going to be a certain way, you're responsible. You're 100% responsible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, my father should be supportive.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there was ever a time in my life growing up, you know, with good reason, that I ever asked him to be supportive of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would fight with him, but I wouldn't say, please, Dad, can you be supportive of me?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Right.
So I'm thinking of other possible examples of rackets. Somebody who says, I'm stuck in this job. I'm not doing what I want to do.
So I heard this in the gym. So there was this gentleman. He's, you know, somewhere in his early 30s, pretty big guy, has the alpha male persona. And I overheard him talking to someone else, you know, I work with a bunch of children. I'm just sitting back and waiting to see if they'll ever grow up. That is a total racket right there. He's putting the responsibility on how things are on someone else. And
mm-hmm.
he's not accepting responsibility for how things are. And what that really does is that limits his interaction with those people. You know,
right.
He's not actually allowing himself, and we'll get to being authentic, right? To be himself and really share what values matter to him, or to actually put those values that really do matter to him there in the relationship with those people, because he sees those people in a certain light.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's like he sees the color red and he says, that's the color red.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's the color red. And maybe he's colorblind and maybe it's actually green.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But the racket there is just It's a perceived way of seeing the world, which then allows him to continue doing what he's doing behavior-wise.
So it's a you could call it a disempowering narrative.
Yes.
That
triggers a habit.
And it sounds like it often has an anchor in the past somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Where someone might say, I can't do that because I was never good at math. I can't do that because somebody told me I couldn't dance.
Yes. And because you shared your little stories about your life, so if we look at someone trying to dance and someone laughs at you, that's one way then now to create a racket around it, right?
Mm-hmm.
A disempowering narrative that then can lead to rackets.
Right.
Because maybe if you're trying to learn to dance and someone's laughing at you, then you go to your eighth grade dance and you want to dance and everyone else is having fun, but you're actually scared to dance because you have that self-empowering, disempowering narrative about dance.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're looking, you're just like, well, no one's asking me to dance.
Right. You're not taking charge of that.
Yeah, everyone's being selfish. No one asked me to dance.
Right.
That's a racket.
So I'll share that short story that Michael referred to just now. When I was a little girl, probably 3 years old, back then everybody, all the mommies took their daughters to dance class, and it was a way to socialize and learn graces and things like that. And so I went to this first class, and the teacher said to everybody, I want you to, you know, skip across the floor. And I did my best version of skip, but I didn't know anything.
You didn't know the distinction of skipping.
Right. So I kind of galloped across the floor, I guess, and the teacher turned her nose up in the air and said, no. And I was singled out, and I can still remember that little triangle under her chin as it pointed up in the air. And I just, at that moment, it was so deflating. I just got the idea that, you know, here's something I'm not good at. I can't dance. I just lumped the whole experience of skipping in with dancing and just wrote that off as a three-year-old. And so I lived with that for a very long time, and then I encountered a modality called Let Your Yoga Dance at a retreat center called Kripalu. And it was probably about 2014 I ran into this, and it was just magnetic. And then a few years went by, and I caught wind of the idea that you could become certified to teach in that modality. And so I did that, and it was really transformative. It was a wonderful teacher training, and it's a wonderful practice.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really transformative to identify and then take back my power around that self-limiting belief. So
I want to just say, you're remarkable. Like, you started off this podcast talking about how someone said, when you said, I ruined my life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they gave you advice that, you know, you're right exactly where you are. This is your life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that you accepted that. You were actually open to what someone else said, and it empowered you.
Right.
That's really amazing, right?
Yeah.
And then, years later, with all that years of not thinking you could dance, to go into Let Your Yoga Dance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And take it on, that's really amazing, right?
Yeah, it's really been transformative for me.
And that's great. You know, that's it's really a sign that you have perseverance, right? And also you're connected to who you are in the world,
mm-hmm.
right? You have a drive to be you,
right?
Despite circumstances.
Yes. So rackets are a powerful thing, and they're they're tied to emotions and triggering.
Yes.
You know,
and why are we talking about rackets? And when we're talking about when things don't work. Well, a lot of reasons that things are not working is you have rackets in the way.
Right. So let's say your five-year plan includes getting ready to run a marathon sometime this year.
Mm-hmm.
You could encounter a lot of rackets that would make that, you know, my spouse won't give me the time to do that. I don't have time, given my work schedule,
mm-hmm.
to prepare for it. You can find I've never been a good runner, I can't do this. You could find a lot of reasons not to do it, and you might find that your plan isn't working because you're running a racket. You're giving life to a disempowering narrative.
Yeah, you're basically putting responsibility outside of yourself, right? And you're doing it unknowingly. It's subconscious.
Yes.
Right? And a good way to clear up rackets is that, you know, you find some sort of feedback loop, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's great that we could talk to each other, right? Because in talking to each other, not only are we putting it out there and we can hear what we say, but we also get the response from each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really? Really?
Right.
Like, so having someone there that you can actually express what's going on around your plan helps you to know if you are running a racket around something.
Right. So there are times when Michael and I in our mastermind, you start talking about something and you realize that it's time to ask the other person, is that really true, or are you choosing to believe that that's true?
Mm-hmm.
And that is a very powerful moment when you realize that you do have a choice about some things that you may have told yourself you don't have a choice about.
Yes, yes, yes. So in my experience too, so I've, before I even did Landmark, I was listening to people and skeptical. Being skeptical here, healthy skepticism is a good way to identify rackets. So I would listen to a whole bunch of friends or clients, and I'd really listen to what they say and be like, is that really so? You
mm-hmm.
know, like, I ruined my life. Is that really so? I need a good example to come to mind right now. But I'm so used to doing it, and I think the simple thing is to really listen to the words being said,
mm-hmm.
which is also what I love about journaling. And I've said this to you, and I've said it to many people. If you could get to the place where you could journal stream of consciousness, right, just thoughts that you are actually having and write them down, you can then start seeing what your thoughts are, and you can actually observe the thoughts, and you could be skeptical of your thoughts. You know, are these thoughts really true?
Mm-hmm.
Is that really the way it is?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I know I have a racket with one of the colleagues that I have at work. So I have a persistent way of seeing him, of listening to him. And basically, I've created that racket with him because what I see him do goes against a lot of my core values.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes me effort, right? And I do this basically on a daily basis. It takes me effort to identify when I'm running a racket with him, right? So that I could not run a racket with him. It doesn't mean that I change my interactions with him. I'm just changing the way I see it, and I can hear what I say about him as he's there, right? So I hear the narrative I have about him. Like today, so I'm in the gym training someone, and I was like, he really doesn't even care about that client.
Mm-hmm.
So now that's the narrative. That's the racket I have. And I see it, and I'm thinking, okay, Michael, be careful of that racket. Because that racket is going to set forth a behavior in you for some sort of reward. But that reward really isn't going to be productive to you, right, of what you're really up to or aligned with your core values.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because if I keep letting that racket go, I'm disempowering myself.
Right.
And I'm not being responsible. So I just accept, okay, there is a racket. I see the racket. And then distinguishing that there is the racket allows me to then see a little more clearly
mm-hmm.
of the circumstances I'm in.
Maybe another way of thinking about this, and you tell me if this is true to your experience, that when you see someone who's training in what seems to be a not thoughtful way or not doing their best with the client, my sense is it can sometimes be a distraction for you. And so that part of the narrative and part of the racket would be, oh, he's here again, training right near me. I can't do my best work when he's here.
Yeah, he's doing this on purpose. He's,
Right.
Of course, yeah. Because essentially what I'm doing, so we talked a little bit about decision-making fatigue. I'm actually using precious brain glucose to entertain those thoughts and also to have a decision about those thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really worth it for me.
Right.
So that's why, like, for me, I acknowledge, oh, there's that racket. I'm aware of it. And my experience is that when I say, there's that racket, where is, so mindfulness, right? So there's that racket, there are thoughts in my mind. Where am I? What's in front of me? And I try to take in all my senses. So I try to see clearly. So I try to see exactly where I am. And I also try to feel, too. So I feel my toes, I feel the clothes on my body. And what that does, excuse me, that brings me more present.
Mm-hmm.
Present to the moment. Because the danger of the racket is that it's going to take you on that loop inside your head, right? That thinking habit loop, which then brings you to a payoff. And that racket I have with this colleague is a habit that brings me to anger,
mm-hmm.
right? I don't want to be angry. I don't want those biochemical reactions going on in my body. I don't want more cortisol in my body, especially when what my duty is at that moment is to be with my client, to see what my client is doing and pay attention to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that racket doesn't serve me. So seeing clearly, seeing like literally perceiving more light into my eyes is part of it, right? Once I distinguish the racket. And the other thing is feeling.
Mm-hmm.
That brings me more present. And once I'm more present, I refocus my attention to my client, to my task, and I continue.
I like that distinction that you make about bringing yourself present and relying on your senses to do that. In his book, Your Brain at Work, David Rock talks about the default network and the sensory network. The default network, where your brain goes just by default, is the narrative of your life and all the people and circumstances and things that go with your life. It's like the crawl underneath the picture when you're watching CNN or Fox, and it just is. It's a constant feed of what just happened, what is happening, what's going on, what's going to happen next. How's my cousin? How's my niece? What's my husband going to do after work today? All those, and it's a very noisy feed,
mm-hmm.
and it's completely absorbing if you allow it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it does burn a lot of glucose managing all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so David Rock advises, you know, every once in a while, give your default network a break. Go to your sensory network. Break the cycle. And disconnect from all those narratives because they're exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
And just rely on your senses to bring you back to the moment. You can, and you no doubt will, go back to your narrative network. That's what they call it, the default network. But give yourself a break, and you'll find yourself refreshed when you go back to thinking about what you're prone to think about.
It also helps to know that, you know, we're prone to look for what's wrong.
Yes.
So rackets are so sneaky. Right, so if we're prone to look for what's wrong because it's a matter of survival, all right, and you're in an environment that is stimulating fight or flight, right, and basically all our modern environments are stimulating fight or flight on some level, you know, music, light, traffic, other people, even our own thoughts. So we're prone to look for threats or look for what's wrong, right, and rackets will easily just pop up. That narrative will easily pop up with an observation.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that what's wrong as a survival tool, you know, goes back to our ancestors who, when they discerned a rustle in the bushes, they had to figure out whether it was a chicken or a bear.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes your viewpoint on dinner. You either are the dinner or you're going to have dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So our bodies are still primed to ask what's wrong, but it's not a matter of dinner, it's sometimes a matter of professional training. I've referred earlier to my career as a lawyer, and that's fundamentally a game about what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You're always, the client tells you a story, and probably they inherently fear that there's something wrong. And so you listen to the story, and you affirm, yes, that's a problem, that's a problem, that's a problem.
Yeah.
These are all things we have to fix. I interviewed with another partner, a client who needed help because he was accused of a campaign finance violation. And he was nervous to begin with, but as we asked him to tell the story, like, it got worse and worse. Like, there were compounded things. He had done one thing wrong, then he did something to try to gloss it over, and then that caused him to do something else wrong. And it just got worse and worse and worse. And we finally had to tell him that we couldn't take his case because there were so many things wrong with his narrative that there was no way to really fix it.
It's so similar to that distinction. You know, don't tell a lie because you end up spending more lies, telling more lies to cover the lie that you told.
Yes.
Right? And you forget the lies that you told.
Right, right.
Which is kind of really good because so we're talking about when things go wrong, right? So we're talking about rackets, which couples with complaints, and we could talk a little bit more about complaints, but essentially the solution to the rackets and the complaints is being more authentic,
mm-hmm.
right? And we could talk a little bit more about that, but first, why don't we talk a little about complaints,
yes.
right? Because I think there's an easy tool to do. It's a word swap when it comes to complaints.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so think of a complaint, right? So think of a desire that you have not accomplished yet, right? Goal desire that you have not accomplished yet, such as, like, I want to get married. I want to get married, but all the good people are taken,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's important how you frame this exercise. So it has to be goal desire, and then you have to give the but reason that it's not
mm-hmm.
occurring. And all you have to do is establish that first sentence, such as, I want to get married, but all the good ones are taken,
mm-hmm.
and then swap out but for and.
Okay.
I want to get married, and all the good ones are taken.
So
what it does is that helps you to shift the way you're actually looking at it,
mm-hmm.
right? So when I experience that word swap myself, it just says, well, I just got to expand where I'm looking.
Right.
Right.
Okay, so then it defines a problem that you can actually work on solving.
Yeah. And, you know, the but word really just seems to create this definitive case.
Right.
Like, that's it. It's
right.
over with.
Yes.
Know? The and becomes a little more expansive and says, well, yes, and the good ones are taking, but there's others out there.
Right, and it may also cause you to question, is it really true? And all the good ones are taking,
mm-hmm.
taken? Really?
Yeah.
And then maybe I'm not looking in the right places. Maybe there's people who are getting divorced back in the pool. Who knows?
Right? Yeah, exactly.
We're taken, but not
See?
Now.
There you go, right?
Right.
Maybe there's some that are developing. Maybe some are moving to the area, right?
Right.
Right. But, yeah. And maybe just your sample size of
mm-hmm.
the people that you're surveying, well, maybe it's too small.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you got to get out more, right?
Right. So there's an intersection, it sounds like, between rackets and complaints. Some rackets contain complaints.
Yeah.
And a complaint may be the entrance to a racket.
Essentially, the bottom line is both rackets and complaints, right, are ways of being or self-narratives that take responsibility off of you and also defines limits,
mm-hmm.
right? Like definitive limits that you can't work against.
So I'll offer one. In the spirit of the exercise, I want to have an active summer, but I just had foot surgery, which I really did.
You want to have an active summer and you just had foot surgery?
So what are my options? What can I do consistent with the care instructions that I have with my foot?
The first thing that came to my mind was aerial yoga.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? There you go. Now we can think about rock climbing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think about swimming. Think about just laying out in a hammock, too.
Mm-hmm.
Think about doing some yoga, some kin stretch.
Right.
See, picnicking.
Right.
Right.
So a couple of years ago, I would have been stuck with that but statement, and I would have focused on, well, I'm not allowed to run, I'm not allowed to hike, I'm not allowed right now to swim. Eventually I will be, but I would be focusing on all those things and saying, you know, okay, well then, no fun this summer. But mentally substituting that and opens up all these possibilities of
mm-hmm.
things that I can do.
And so, and as we're talking, it's very subtle, like just these changes.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that, and because I've talked to these people, there are people out there that don't want to hear these shifts. And they'll build cases, more narratives about how their complaints or how the rackets are justified.
Right.
And they'll go down and down and down and down.
I walked into the gym this morning with a woman I'm a little bit acquainted with, and she had been on the phone outside as we entered, and we exchanged how are yous, and she said, oh, I just have too much work. And so I said, well, why don't you tell them that you can't work right now? And she said, well, I can't do that. I'm not there yet. I can't do that.
Racket.
Yeah, so, I mean, she's very committed to fitness. I wish for her the empowerment to say, I can't talk to you right now, colleague, boss, subordinate, because I have something I have to do.
Well, essentially, she's not being authentic, right? If you look at the picture, she's outside the gym in her gym clothes, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is she doing? Like, so what commitment is she honoring? Is she really honoring her fitness, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or is she honoring her work?
Right.
To me, she's actually using both to dishonor both.
Mm.
Right? It's as if I want to go to the gym and I want to be fit, but I actually don't want to do the work. There's something about the work of getting fit that I just don't want to do. It's not right for me. It's right for other people. I'm going to allow this work phone call to delay me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
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 And there you are standing outside letting that call delay you. At the same time, if there's anything happening at work, right, that needs to be done, needs your time, well, get it done or create some sort of catch so that it can be held by others
mm-hmm.
while you go do what you need to do at the gym.
Right.
Having a really good workout is not hard to do.
Right.
You don't even need a gym to have a really good workout, right, for fitness. And
mm-hmm.
if you have specific goals, right, you can just tailor your workout to that. You can
right.
get help in that department, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. What should we move to next, Michael?
Well, we're going to talk about self. We talk about being authentic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and I kind of this woman outside of the gym on the phone talking to work and not going to the gym, right? Is she being authentic? Has she been genuine, right? So is she relating to the world from her true self? That's a pretty big question, right? So are you really relating to the world by your true self? Well, what is your true self, right? You could probably go on and on and on, digging deeper and deeper and deeper into who you are, to the point where it kind of slips away of who you think you are.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, you're just like, no, this is me. This is right. So what I say is you go to your core values, right?
Mm-hmm.
Core values is a great way for you to really align yourself, align your mind, your narrative with who you are, right? So the core value words, right? If you look through a whole bunch of them, right? So are you a determined person? Are you a fair person? Are you a fun person? Are you a loving person? If you could look at all your situations and really say, well, this is who I am. This is why I'm here. I'm here to be this person. this is how I'm going to respond to the world right now.